Hi, I'm Danielle Carmanis, and I'm so happy you're here. Welcome back to Karma Has Spoken. Whether you're a night owl or social butterfly or a mama bear, our next guest is the queen bee that makes Detroit a buzz. As the founder of After Five, Connect After Five, the After Five Intern Program, and Little Guide Detroit, Carrie Doman is a leader, game changer, visionary, and making philanthropy a hot topic in our town. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming over to Lucy to play.
This is gorgeous. I want one in my backyard.
Oh, thank you. So how did this all come to be? Where did After Five come from?
Oh, I mean, as you listed off all of the different ventures, I'm like, I'm just a serial masochist, just like an entrepreneur at heart. And honestly, they've all followed my personal path. So After Five, I started right after I graduated. I went to Country Day and went to school in Ohio, not Ohio State, don't worry, a small school in Ohio. And after that, I went to Chicago. Kind of like the rite of passage of so many young professionals here in Metro Detroit, but only spent a year and came back here. And that's when I realized so many of my peers, so many of my friends had left and they weren't returning. And so I didn't really know anyone and I didn't know where to go. And that's where After Five came from. It was born out of my need to meet new people, find out what to do and where to go. And then as it's evolved, we have connected a lot with the downtown corporate community. And that's where Connect After Five comes into play. And we do monthly events with the downtown corporate community and their employees. And then the interns program, which is one of my loves, just because interns are our next generation of workforce. We need to invest in them. We need to recruit them. We need to retain them. And so our program works with these companies in attracting and retaining them and helping them say, okay, you focus on the job opportunities. We'll focus on the lifestyle. Because they're college kids. You know, right. They want to know that it's fun. They want to know that there are people here their age, that there are cool things to do. That's what they want to know. And if there are great job opportunities and a fun lifestyle, then we have an opportunity to retain them. And then lastly, I'm a new mom. I mean, newish. I can't believe I have a 3-year-old and an 8-month-old. And I can't believe the 3-year-old. I can't believe I've been a mom for 3 years.
Well, my oldest, I have twins that are 10, and I still can't believe I'm a mom. I don't think that ever changes.
Isn't that crazy? It's crazy. I was like, he's going to be 3. And so that came about, again, out of my own personal need of, we live downtown Detroit, and there was no resource that was talking to me. One of, okay, what do I do with the 6-month-old? Literally, I don't know what can I, swim lessons, gymnastics, you know, they have everything now. And you're like, what can I and should I be doing with him? And then secondly, no one is talking about Detroit and the families that are either living there or want to come visit there. And that's where Little Guide Detroit was born out of. And that has taken off. It's been such a fun venture.
I mean, Carrie, I love this so much and the whole experience and giving, at every point in their lives, giving access to Detroit and this very social, fun, dynamic, urban experience, right? And getting the kids down there. So, you know, my boys, I took them a few Mondays ago on a slow roll. And it was so much fun. I mean, there were tears towards the end. It was a little bit longer than one of them expected.
Totally. Yep.
But the experience, I tell you what, the next day I was finding all of my friends and telling them, you have to take your kids on a slow roll. And before we did that, we went to Belle Isle, and my youngest, who just turned 7, just learned how to ride a bike. So we took our bikes to Belle Isle.
Yeah.
And it was a hot day, so we ended up on one of the beaches that was jam-packed.
Yeah. Yeah.
They said, what do we swim in? And I said, you know, your shorts. And they jumped in the water. And Carrie, we had the best day. I grew up in the city. I grew up going downtown. And those are some of my best memories. Yeah. So I am so thankful and I so appreciate that you have created this experience. And I have so many friends who live in the suburbs who did not grow up going downtown, right? So it's so foreign to them. And when I tell them about the Soul Roll or Eastern Market or going to Belle Isle, it's just not on their radar. So these experiences that you're creating, it's really opening up a whole new world.
Yeah, and that's our goal. I mean, we're a region-wide website so that if you are in Birmingham or Novi or Rochester, we have things in your backyard. Because at the end of the day, even though I live downtown and do a lot, we go different places with our kids. So I will take them to swim class in Birmingham and we'll go on Paint Creek Trail in Rochester. You know, when you have kids and you know this, you're more apt to get out and do things. You have to. And that was like, they are not sitting still. Yeah. So you are not sitting still. And I'm gonna let you in on something. Speaking of slow roll, we're working on a stroller roll. And the idea being, again, the tagline is your kids don't sleep in on the weekend, so neither do we. On Sunday mornings, come down on the Detroit Riverfront, the DeQuinder Cut. There's so much that they have done on both the Riverfront and the DeQuinder Cut. Come down, bring your strollers, and let's create this community of parents coming out with their strollers, walk, jog. There's no start time. There's no end time. So we're excited. In a couple of weeks, hopefully by the end of September, we'll have a date and we'll do it September and October.
Carrie, this is so amazing. I have goosebumps. We had a friend who was visiting from Chicago last year, and we went downtown with our kids and we rented bikes and we did the DeQuinder Cut. And for anyone who's listening who hasn't done it yet, you have to do the DeQuinder Cut.
It's like, so cool.
Trust us, right? Get the down graffiti, there with a stroller,
so
or
cool.
walking or riding. So you didn't intend to be an entrepreneur,
no.
right? But you are a dynamic leader and entrepreneur. And we only have a few minutes left, but I want to know about your experience as an entrepreneur and also your commitment to philanthropy and yeah. making philanthropy topical, because it's so important.
It is so important. And again, going back to that Detroit component and having such deep roots there now and raising our boys there, I've been involved in a number of different nonprofits. I'm currently on the board for the Bull Family YMCA. They built this beautiful facility down there, and they do a lot to engage all walks of life, and from camp and sponsorship where kids can't afford that, but yet they need positive outlets during the summer when they're not in school. You know, you think camp and you're like, oh, that's fun. But there's always a deeper meaning. You know, there can be a deeper meaning. And so it's stuff like that where it tugs at my heart and I love being involved. I also am proud to, I was a co-founder and co-chair for the Emerging Philanthropist Initiative as part of the United Way of Southeastern Michigan. I just stepped down from that because I gave everything in starting that up with the co-founders for about 6 years in launching that, but it's still near and dear to my heart. And now, you know, looking for other opportunities. And I really encourage that for all young professionals and everyone in all walks of life, whether you're starting your career or you're deep in your career, look at what calls you at the time. And don't feel like you have to, you know, that called to me at a particular time. It was a great opportunity to start something at the helm. Bill Ford and Lisa Ford were at the key of that, and they pushed that initiative. And so great opportunity, but now I'm looking for what else speaks to me and what's next on my philanthropic career, because it is a career.
It really is. It takes a lot of time. Well, what has surprised you, and this will be my last question, what has surprised you most about being a leader and entrepreneur in our community? For our listeners who are thinking about starting a business or taking an entrepreneurial route, what is your advice?
What has surprised me most is the accessibility to people. Look, I'm sitting here with you. I mean, it's so amazing that if you're doing positive things for Detroit or Metro Detroit or just doing really amazing things, people will open their doors to you. They will help you. I've felt that from the minute I started as a very young, naive entrepreneur, not knowing anything, people saw what we were trying to do and wanted to reach out and help in any way possible. So don't be timid about getting involved. Even if you can donate a little bit or get involved, like, your skills are an asset too. So if you feel, if you're at the beginning of your career and you maybe can't donate that big ticket item, you can come and say, you know what, I'm an accountant. Put me to work. I'm a lawyer. Put me to work. These nonprofits, these organizations, they need those skills too.
Yeah. I'm such a firm believer in that. And even way back when I was starting my career, I'd always tithe 10%. So for me, it's important to tithe resources, but I've always believed in tithing my time.
Yeah.
Right? It's so important to give back. And I so appreciate you and what you've done for Detroit. And I can't wait to watch the stroller. I'm done having kids, but I have friends with kids and they will be there. So where can people get more information about everything you have going on?
Yeah. So After 5 Detroit is after5detroit.com. And Little Guide Detroit is Little Guide, G-U-I-D-E. We have boys, so everyone always thinks I say little guy, but it's littleguidedetroit.com. You can find us on social at After 5 Detroit and at Little Guide Detroit.
Thank you for coming by, Lucy, and hanging
Thank
out.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Our next guest is a former state championship swimmer, an amateur photographer, a fiercely fighting attorney in the Larry Nassar sex abuse case, and CEO of a nonprofit that distributes grants to nonprofits in Oakland County. She is fun, funny, nurturing, and I am so thrilled to talk to Mary Pat Rosen. Hi.
Hi.
Welcome to Lucy.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
It's a beautiful day.
It is.
Right? It's fun. This is a fun space to just kind of like hang out. I want to talk about everything that you have going on. I mean, you have a lot going on.
I mean,
your middle school boys track coach.
I am.
Right? You're an amateur photographer.
I am.
You are an attorney fighting against Larry Nassar.
I am.
So we want to hear about that.
Yep.
You are also the CEO of the nonprofit. We're going to cover all of it, but I was Googling and finding more information on it, and you're surrounded by an extraordinary board of fabulous women.
Absolutely.
And I thought, you know, where you go, amazing things seem to follow. So I just want to hear about everything.
Okay.
Well, let's just start with Larry Nassar. And, you know, I know I read that you early on in your career, and maybe it's even why you pursued law, is you're quoted as saying you feel a heartfelt obligation to make a wrong a right.
Yes.
And it gives me goosebumps.
Yeah.
So is that what drew you to this case, or was there a person, or how did it all transpire?
Okay. It's interesting you have that quote, because that was over 30 years ago.
Oh, well.
And it's still true today. I was just recently interviewed, said the same thing.
But I love that, because it's a recurring theme and it's a thread of who you are, and it's very consistent in the trajectory of your career and everything that you've done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how I got involved in the Nassar cases is cases were referred to us, and they thought it would be easier for their clients to talk to a female attorney, and my reputation precedes me, you know. So that's really how I got involved, and I'm representing three of the young women that are involved in the case in the second wave.
And so I read that one of your clients, in fact, when she was testifying before the Board of Trustees at Michigan State, was so overwhelmed at one point she had to run out of the room. And you came after her, and this gives me goosebumps again, and consoled her. And you were nurturing, and you took care of her. And it just, you know, it's such a sad situation. At the same time that you're able to be available to these women is extraordinary. What has surprised you the most as you've gotten involved, beyond, you know, what most of us have read about in the media?
There's two things, and they're actually two totally different things. One is just how emotionally taxing going through this case is. We almost internalize the pain that, you know, our clients are going through. And when you talk about nurturing, you know, I almost feel sometimes like their mom. Mm. And I had to recognize that that's what was going on, that we do. We were so emotional for them, but at the same time, we have to represent their interests and to kind of keep that separate. The other thing that surprised me most about the representation is just really how truly, I'm a Michigan State grad, how truly disappointed I am in how Michigan State has handled this and the extent of the cover-up that was going on.
I mean, how did this happen? As a parent, it's just, it's terrifying, right?
It's horrifying.
It's horrifying. How can something like that go on in this day and age? I mean, what have you seen? I mean, both, I think, personally and professionally, how do we stop this from happening? How do we protect our own kids? What do we look for? You know, so many, I have four boys, so of course I want to protect from anything sinister, right?
Right.
I have, a goddaughter. I have a lot of friends with daughters, and any of them would do anything to protect their kids. And
right.
And I'm sure all of these parents as well. What can we do? What have you seen? What advice do you have for parents?
Well, in talking to some of the parents that actually were, their children were involved, who were in the room when it was going on, is just to be more aware of, you know, if there's a situation like that where your child is with a physician, totally be hands-on, totally be eyes-on. Just an awareness to that, because these parents said they just really had no clue it was going on. Also to listen to your children, because I would say 100% of the young women that I spoke to, they were saying things like, I don't feel comfortable with him. I don't want to go back to him. But everyone was saying that he was the Olympic doctor, that, you know, you're blessed to be seen by him because he knows what he's doing and he's getting these elite athletes back out, you know, in the gym. So I would say that's probably the strongest thing. Listen to your children and listen to what they're saying. And if they have an uncomfortableness, to follow up on that and not to ignore it.
Right. Yes.
And I'm not going to say these parents were ignoring it.
Right.
But, you know, even coaches were saying, you know, if you say anything bad about him, you're going to be kicked off the team.
Oh.
Or you're on this team, you're going to see him, and that's the only one you're going to see. And honestly, it flabbergasts me that I have no idea how he was allowed to get away with it as long as he was. I mean, it was. So that, I guess that's what I would recommend, and follow your gut.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, you just think about these girls and these parents and these families, and they had dedicated their entire lives, right, to the training and right. their daughters. And I guess, you know, I don't want to judge anyone's circumstances, of course. And
right.
you say, of course, all parents want to protect their kids.
Right.
It's just so heartbreaking and so hard to comprehend. Do you think Michigan State has learned their lesson? Do you think they will change how... Do you think they'll change anything?
Well, I think they have implemented some change. The biggest thing is awareness. I represent women in wave two. There was a wave one that settled. Wave two then came on after, and there were 169 more girls who filed after the testimony. And part of what, like my client, when she testified in front of the Board of Trustees, was to request of the Board of Trustees to initiate investigations. And we wanted transparency. We want accountability. We want to know how this happened and what they're going to do to stop it from happening again.
So how many girls total?
There were 330 in the first wave. And that's the one that everybody hears about that settled. There's 169 women, young women, that right. filed. Many of them, I would say most of them in wave two, were minors at the time it happened. Filed in the second wave. So, and those cases have not settled. Yeah, I do believe there are more, and they just didn't come forward for various reasons. So
when you're, you know, in the middle of something like this, and you think back to feeling, like we said earlier on, you know, this quote, a heartfelt obligation to make a right a wrong, how do you feel about being in this career? How do you feel about being an attorney? Does it make you feel like it was sort of divine that you chose this path and you have this opportunity now to defend these girls, these women? You know, you never could have prepared for anything like
right.
this,
right?
Right.
I do believe I'm absolutely where I'm supposed to be. And I do believe I'm giving a voice to clients
mm-hmm.
Who otherwise may not have come forward or may not have known how to go about.
In the community, and you do so much to help so many, right? And as president of Impact, tell us a little bit about what you're doing and, you know, some of the stories of who you've worked with and some of the nonprofits that you've supported.
I'll tell you exactly what Impact is first. Mm-hmm. So it started as a concept by this woman, Wendy Steele. Get 100 women together, give $1,000, and then give a award, one $100,000 grant to a nonprofit in your community. And so now I know there are over 60, 70 impacts across the country and in Australia, with many more starting up. And Ginny Fishbach and Amy Lope brought the concept here because they had heard about it in Baldwin County down south. So we started Impact 100 in Oakland County. I was the third member.
And when was that?
We filed the papers in 2015.
And, oh, wow. Okay.
And we awarded our first grant, $100,000. We reached 100 members in 6 months in 2016. And then 2017, we awarded $201,000 because we had 201 members. And then last year, we awarded three $90,000 grants because we had 270 members. So 100% of the membership dues goes to the nonprofit. We decided to concentrate on Oakland County because we thought we could make a better impact the smaller the geographic area. And part of our business plan was to assist others if they wanted to start impacts in Macomb County and Wayne County, which one of our members did start a Impact 100 in Macomb County. There is an Impact 100 Metro, which covers Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb County, that had started just a few months before us. And we were in conversation with them to try to see if we could all work together. But they liked the idea of doing the bigger geographic area. We just decided to do the smaller. And so the grants we award are to nonprofits serving primarily Oakland County.
I mean, this is such an amazing concept, right? Like, you think about getting together with your girlfriends and saying, all right, let's all just put in $1,000 and help some people. And it works, right?
It definitely works. We have awarded such amazing grants. What it really has done for us is opened our eyes to what the needs are in Oakland County. Because everybody thinks of Oakland County as Birmingham and Bloomfield.
Sure.
And being one of the wealthiest counties in the state. There's so much need, you know, right up the road in Pontiac. And our grants have been to feed children on the weekends and a suicide text and chat line for teenagers. Didn't know that was so prevalent, you know, until we went through this process. Literacy program in Pontiac. Last year, we gave one to Rainbow Connection, their impact kits, to help families with their financial needs. They have critically ill children, but everybody forgets all the incidental expenses that go along with that, like going to dinner while your child's in the hospital. Sure. Or hotel, you know, things like that. And we also then gave to Huron Metro Parks for their STEM program, and they're going into the schools and teaching them about agriculture, then teaching them how to grow the food, and then cook the food, and then the surplus to donate the food. So, yeah, so we've been...
It's such an interesting concept. So for anyone who's listening and maybe starting up a nonprofit or running a nonprofit and looking to apply, are there any parameters? What are you looking for? How can people apply for these grants?
Okay, well, the application is online, and our grant cycle just closed just recently. So we're going to be giving, awarding, I always say giving away, awarding grants in October, October 22nd. And okay. Then that grant, the 2020 grant cycle, will start all over again. We won't know how much money that we have available until the close of membership, which will be March of 2020. And then we will announce to the nonprofit world that this is what's available, and then they can start applying for the grants then. So this summer, right now, what's happening is we have all the applications in. We have over 47 applicants, and our members volunteer and go through the grant review committee in our five different focus areas.
And so how many members do you have?
Right now we have 306.
Wow, okay. And is that it? Or do you have a goal? Or, I mean, as many members as you can get? Do you want it to keep growing?
We would love...
What does the perfect model look like?
We would love it to keep growing. And
okay.
We actually just went through our mission statement, our vision statement, our core values. Mm-hmm. We would like to continue to grow the organization. Our short-term goal would be to obtain 500 members, because we have five different categories and we would love to give a grant in each category.
And what are the categories?
Education, health and wellness, family, arts and culture, and environment and recreation.
So for women who are listening, mm-hmm. who are interested in getting involved, what does it look like to be a member of this community? Right. So it's probably more than just writing a check for $1,000.
Actually, what it is, it's what you make of it.
Okay.
You could just write a check. And some people, that's all they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Don't have time to do anything else. So they can write a check.
But they'll still be involved in voting.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. They vote at the... And that's what... There's so many fun things about this. Okay. So
well, we want to hear all of them. Okay.
So, yeah.
Tell us everything.
You make it what you want it to be. There are so many volunteer opportunities. There's leadership opportunities. So the heart of what we do, obviously, is awarding these grants. And so being on the grant review committee, I think, is probably one of the most fulfilling. Mm. But we have events and finance and marketing and communications and sponsorship and... Legal, me. Yeah, so there's so many different ways for volunteers to get involved, and they can honestly be involved as much as they want or not. And the beauty of this is everyone gets a vote. Every member gets one vote. So what happens during this summer, these grant review committees decide on one finalist from each of the five categories.
Okay.
Those five will present at the annual meeting in October, and then the membership votes that night on who gets awarded.
Do all of your members then attend and
yes.
vote that night? Okay.
Yeah, or by absentee ballot, but we encourage everybody to come because it's such an emotional night.
I bet.
Yeah, and it's so hard. It's always so hard to pick. You're, like this year we'll be giving away three $102,000 grants. Like, how do you decide, right?
And which categories?
All five. So,
in all five. Okay.
Well, see, the five finalists will present, mm-hmm. and this year we'll be awarding three
okay.
impactful grants. So.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about you, right? So you're one of five kids.
Six.
Oh, six. Okay.
Yes.
And where do you fall? I'm always curious. Where do you fall in the birth order?
Third child, oldest girl.
Okay. All right. So I think middle children are so special.
I think they're all special. I'm a firstborn. I think we're special.
Yeah, you tell us how special you are.
Right. Oh, I just did. Oh, this is awkward.
I think the babies are so special.
They
tell us
how special they are, too.
Oh, my goodness. Don't they? Right?
Yes.
And then my two sons who are middle children, you know, they are so adaptable. You can put them in any situation and they immediately make friends. They can, you know, acclimate to anything.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a little bit of first being the first girl, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And being the middle child. So you grew up as a swimmer. Were all your siblings swimmers?
Well, we were because we joined a swim club and my parents said, this is what you're going to do
uh-huh.
you know, to keep you busy.
And did you do it year round or you must have to be?
Well, I did and my two sisters.
Okay.
We did it year round. The three boys did their other sports.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the three of us continued to do it year round. Okay, here's a fun fact. I'm going to be inducted into my high school Hall of Fame in September.
It's so exciting. I saw that. I wish we had a cocktail. We toast.
But I said, just don't put me as the Title IX poster child.
Oh, no.
Because 72 was when Title IX passed. And then our first swim team for the high school was in 1973. So
what were your events?
All the sprints. I was not a distance swimmer. I was 50 free, 100 free, and 100 fly. And then the relays.
Fly is so hard. Two of my sons swim summer swim. And, you know, listen, we're not really swim people.
And don't tell them.
We sort of joined a few years ago because we live on a lake and I wanted them to be strong swimmers.
Yep.
We, you know, we're hockey people. We like our water frozen and we like to be on top of it. But they try and they're into it. But one of my sons in particular, I don't know why, but they keep putting him into the fly category. And it's so hard. Pete and I watch him and I couldn't do it, right?
He must be strong.
He's very, very strong.
Yeah,
he is very strong. That is kind of his superpower. But swimmers are very interesting. I mean, I think my sons love being part of a team because it's definitely a team sport, but it's also very singular, right? You're
right.
In the water, you're not talking, you're not listening to music, you're just in your head.
Right.
How do you think that in becoming a state champion swimmer, right? So you are the top of your field.
I wasn't quite champion. I did go to states.
Okay.
But yeah, I was not the champion. My sister actually was a state champion in diving. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how do you think your skills and your training as a swimmer helped prepare you? And I'm so curious now as a parent watching my sons, kind of like what sort of skills they're honing as they swim, right?
Well, I can tell you one of my first jobs that mm-hmm. I, after graduating from law school, they hired me because I was a swimmer.
Really?
And they said, you know how to work hard.
Were you a lifeguard?
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, no, my law. One of my first legal jobs, they said swimmers are hardworking, dedicated, and that's the type of person they wanted to hire. So
do you still swim?
Not as much as I like to. I tried to do the master's program for a while and I was exhausted. It's really hard work.
And is your son a swimmer?
He is not and never wanted to go in the pool. No, he's not a swimmer. He's baseball and
So how did you become a middle school boys track coach?
That's an interesting question, isn't it?
I hope so.
There was an opening and I happened to know the coach that was coaching and I knew the athletic director being involved with Cranbrook and just asked if I wanted to do that, and I loved it.
You're kidding.
I mean, I absolutely loved it.
This is so interesting. So you're also on the Board of Trustees at Cranbrook.
Board of Governors.
Oh, Board of Governors. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm at Country Day. We're trustees. So
okay.
Did you become the coach before or after you were on the board?
In the middle.
In the middle. Okay.
Yeah. I just finished my 10-year term as governor at Cranbrook, and okay. I've been coaching for 5 years.
Okay.
So.
And had you ever coached track before? I mean, what was the learning curve like? No,
I've coached kids before.
This is interesting. I mean, I think it's your normal for me. And I think for most people listening, it's just not something you wake up and say, I think I want to be a middle school boys track and field coach today.
No.
It's no. So what has that experience been like? What was the training like? What has surprised you about it?
You know, give me something to do and I'll do it 110%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the way I looked at it. What's it been like? I have to tell you, those boys make me laugh every single day. You know, they're middle school, you know, 10, 11 years old to 13 years old. And we went through an exercise as a coach saying, why do you coach? For 2 minutes, you had to answer the question, why do you coach? And it's, oh, because you want to give back. And oh, you know, I had great mentoring when I was a coach. Oh, finally, what we came around to saying and recognizing is we do it for ourselves too. You know, it makes us feel good to be able to give back. And it's so fulfilling that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the training was, gosh, the athletic director said, here's a couple books. Here you can go talk to the coaches, you know, the upper school coaches. Uh-huh. And so self-taught.
Do you love it? Do you feel like it's a good fit? If there was an opportunity to be a swim coach, would you want to switch? Or do you feel like this has been...
This is perfect.
This is a perfect fit.
It's a perfect fit.
So what's been the strangest experience you've had so far?
Coaching?
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it's strange. You know, standing over one of my runners as he's vomiting, like 5 feet from the finish line, telling him to get up and go finish.
Uh-huh.
Like standing there with him, not, you know. So I don't know if that's the strangest, but... The boy that I did that with, I tell him every year, you know, I use you as an example every year to eat healthy and because I don't want to see it a second time.
Yeah.
But his parents would tell me and everyone that that was really a very inspirational moment for him because I didn't say, oh, poor honey, you threw up, you can quit.
Right.
I said, get up and go finish. And I think he would probably tell
you.
And he did. Yeah. So not strange, but... Uh-huh.
And so are they coming to you for advice about girls? And
they are... we make them shake our hand every day.
Mm.
Ask us how our day was. We ask how their day was. So we look them in the eye. They have to look us in the eye. And we will ask them, you know, how their day was. And sometimes they'll tell us.
Uh-huh.
Some are still... not comfortable doing that. Girls really are kind of a funny subject in middle school for boys, so they don't really ask us much for advice. But they know the woman I coach with is also a boy mom, so they know we've had boys that have gone through the system, and you know, when they try to come up with excuses for something, we're like, yeah, no.
Uh-huh.
Been there,
heard
done
them all.
That. Yeah. Good try, though. But they do talk about, you know, if they had a bad day or if somebody was not nice to them or if they didn't do well on a test or they got in trouble with a teacher. So they will talk to us about that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we just try to be there for them and encourage them. A couple times we have spoken to the faculty about what's going on. Yeah, so...
Yeah, I would think, I mean, this is the time of day that they're letting their guards down.
Yeah.
They're kind of making themselves available. They're talking to each other just casually. And so you have access to a lot of information.
Yes.
So,
well, as you know, with boys, they kind of forget you're there.
They do.
And yeah. You just stand and listen.
Uh-huh.
Well, I hope they're not listening to this.
And so what does a typical day look like for you?
Right now or?
Yeah, right now.
Well, here, I'll use the day when I was coaching. So I'd go to my office. Yeah, I practice law. And then on coaching days, I would leave at 2:00, go to the school, and we'd be done around 5.
Mm-hmm.
And depending on the workload, I could go back to the office. And while Impact is also going through, it could be that I go to an Impact meeting. Usually we have those in the evening. Yeah, so here, I don't have a typical day. How's that?
Okay, and that's fair. And so what other type of law are you practicing? What are you drawn to?
I do mostly medical malpractice work, personal injury work, litigation work. That just became a natural transition. When I was in law school, I worked for, I don't know what they call it now, but it was the Department of Labor, Handicapper Concerns and Commission for the Blind.
Okay.
That's where I guess this all started, giving, you know, people a voice that mm-hmm. don't have a voice. So
what's been the most, aside from Larry Nassar and all of that, what has been the most interesting or kind of profound case that you've had throughout your career? I mean, was there a case that you feel like really kind of changed your life or changed your perspective?
Gosh, no, not really. I guess I appreciate what others go through. It has helped me be more empathetic.
Mm.
So I guess I can't say there's one case. They're all so unique,
yeah,
and so individual to the clients. And I learn something new every case. So, yeah, I can't say there was one over another. So.
And then what do you do to take care of yourself? What do you like to do for fun?
Oh.
I know you are an amateur photographer.
I love photography. We just started an Instagram to post all these photos because I also love to hike and go on crazy adventures.
Okay, so let's catch you right there. And okay, first of all, what is your Instagram so we can check out your photography?
Well, there's two. One okay. for my personal photography and one for our landscape photography. Navigating_nature. And
that's your personal?
That's the landscape.
Landscape,
that's
okay.
That's the hiking. And we picked that name because we are so bad at navigating. You'd think we've been doing this a long time that we would not get lost every hike we go on, but we do. So it's kind of a play on, it's a private joke.
Well, okay, so
we don't navigate
don't
well.
Don't worry. It's just us in my trailer.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, Pete and I went to Lake Placid. Gosh, it was before we had kids, so maybe like 12 or 13 years ago. And went hiking, thought we knew what we were doing, and we didn't. And thank God we had our dogs with us because we were terribly turned backwards. We got completely lost. And at one point, it was dusk. We came to a fork in the road. We wanted to go left. The dogs wanted to go right. We were smart enough to know the dogs were smarter than us.
Yeah.
So we followed the dogs, who fortunately led us to safety. It, you know, so you hear these stories sometimes on the news of people, you know, being out and getting lost. You think, come on, how could that actually happen? Or it happens.
It happens.
So how has it happened to you?
Well, fortunately, yeah, our sons have told us, you know, we just don't want to see you on Fox News, Mom. You know, like, but we were just out in Moab hiking, and it's usually 3 to 5 of my girlfriends that we do this with, and with no real history in hiking or backpacking or anything. But we do. I mean, that was actually the first time we really got into a little bit of a tiff about, I was for sure we were supposed to go one way. She was for sure we were supposed to go the other way. And fortunately, you know, and most of the time you don't see anybody out in these hikes. And this couple we had met from New Zealand about an hour earlier yelled out to us, "Are you guys still lost?"
Oh, no.
Yep.
They're like, come this way.
So now we take GPS with us on ones that are, you know, more wilderness trails. So I had to learn how to do that. That was fun. So, yeah. So
do you like to hike in Michigan?
I do.
Do you have a favorite spot? Where do you think is the best hiking? Locally?
No.
Okay.
I would say in the Upper Peninsula. Whenever I would have to go up there for work, I would take a couple extra hours, and I love chasing waterfalls. That's kind of my thing. So, yeah, I would love to go up to the Porcupine Mountains and hike up there. I heard that's beautiful. I would say my favorite place to hike is out west, Utah, Arizona. Mm. I've kind of concentrated in those areas, but I'll be going to Alaska, and we're going to be hiking there.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
So. Oh, that's going to be an amazing trip.
Yeah.
And so your excited. Instagram is filled with images from these trips?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's the navigating_nature. And then my you know, I like to do senior photography. And
no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I love to do that and family photography.
You're just so interesting. I say it's my creative outlet.
It is. I love it. It's like beautifully random.
Exactly.
So when you ask typical, nothing's typical.
No, I mean, as I was researching you, I'm like, there's just nothing typical. It's fabulous.
It's fun.
Senior photography. So how did you become interested in taking senior pictures?
Okay. So yeah, I was taking pictures of my son and his teammates as, you know, they were growing up since he was 8 years old. So by the time it came to senior year and senior photos, they just were so used to me taking their photos that they said, why don't you just do it? And along the way, there was a dad that said, I was capturing something and I didn't really understand what it was that was different than maybe someone else's photo. So I started, I took classes and, well, this is my personality, you know, so I'm able to draw out even the most resistant senior boy or girl, you know, that doesn't want to be there having their photos taken. And I'm able to capture something. To me, it's really fun. And I always tell the moms to come because it's such a moment. You know, it's just another step in their senior year. Yeah. So I've come around to feel like it's a gift I can give people.
Absolutely it is. So what advice do you have in prepping? So I'm thinking back to my senior picture and it was awful. And of course it was in the early 90s and my hair was permed out of the shot, right? And it was a little orange from the sun in I had used. And I was wearing a turquoise fuzzy sweater. And a woman, like an adult who was in my life after, said, oh, that was a horrible color. You shouldn't have worn that. And I went, oh,
I know.
Yeah. So now when I look at the picture, not that I look at it very often, I think, oh, I shouldn't have worn that. So what advice do you have? What's the best way to prepare for senior pictures? What advice do you have for parents? I would imagine you want to try and create something that's sort of classic and timeless, right? Where do you like to shoot?
I do all outdoors. I just like different settings outdoor. You know, Cranbrook grounds are beautiful. That's limited though, but I just, yeah, anything, you know, backyards are beautiful. And if someone wants to create that memory, yeah, we just go to someone's backyard if they have a beautiful garden or something like that. But it's so funny the way you were introducing this topic or that question is what I tell, mostly I tell the parents to tell the kids, but wear something to represent who they are at this moment and how they want to remember this moment. Mm. And I know, you know, some photographers will say, wear this, wear that. I'm not like that. I'm just whatever they feel comfortable in. And some have taken that literally. Mm-hmm. My son actually was looking at some photos I did of this one boy who NBA jersey and sweatpants. And his comment to that was, that's a cool mom. He's got a cool mom that would let him do that. Mm-hmm. But I did require that he put something else on. I said, just the ones you want to send to grandma.
Just some options,
yeah. Right. Wear the blue blazer, so we at least have that one.
And so had you always been interested in photography?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so how did you, what was your training? Do you have a favorite camera? So I like to take pictures and I have a Canon. I have a few different pictures. And in the end, I just use my phone.
Right? Yes, I know. What so many people do. So yeah, I started from when I was like 5 years old. I always had those little Instamatic things and, you know, just graduated. I'm a Canon person. Mm. I like Canon. So I have a 80D.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then organizing. Do you have a tip or a trick for organizing pictures?
If you knew me, you would laugh. No, I am not very good at organizing them.
No, but you know what? For myself and for people listening, that's actually very validating to hear.
I have folders.
Okay.
I do have a site that I put everything on. And that is my next project, is actually to categorize every folder into a gallery.
So that's not the fun part, right?
That's not the fun part.
No.
Yeah.
But the lawyer in you can do it, right?
As an attorney,
you can focus and yeah, I can
do this.
we're doing a major home renovation project and I'm working with someone who said, okay, I need 60 pictures, 60. And I'm thinking, okay, 60 pictures. Pete and I have been together for, you know, 16, 17 years. And our twins are 10.
I have, since my twins were born, I have 120,000 pictures on my Mac. Yeah. So this is a good excuse to go through. And it's kind of like cleaning out a junk drawer. Not that family pictures are junk, but yeah, it's hard, right? Taking pictures is fun. Yes. Organizing pictures, less fun.
Not so fun.
Yeah. Not so much fun.
And as we've done this Instagram post, I was recognizing that, yeah, I could probably organize them better, because then we were guessing
right
what year was it and what... But you can do that, you know, from the properties on the photo, but
right,
it would be easier if I just do it right from the get-go.
I know, right? And I think with social media now, with posting pictures, I think when I posted it, I don't need to organize it, right? Everyone's already seen it. Right. Which now makes it harder to do a family photo for holiday cards or Christmas cards, right?
Right.
Because I end up putting my best pictures on our story.
Yes, exactly.
And then most of the people I'd be sending them to have already seen it.
I've already seen it.
I know. Right. I know. These are good problems to have, though. Yes. Right. Yes. So what is next for you? What's your next hobby, your next project? What do you have in the works? There must be something, or you're just open to whatever life kind of throws your way.
Yeah, because I'm still kind of, you know, I'm still president of Impact. I'll be stepping down in November. My 2-year term will be up. I know there'll be some transitioning with my law firm. I'll know I continue with the photography, you know, mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm always, my eyes are always open.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
And you're also a mentor, right? Do you teach reading?
I do, yeah, for the Hub program.
I mean, see, you're endless.
Yeah. That actually is really very rewarding. It's the Horizon Upward Bound program at Cranbrook. And the students have a Sister Mister program. It's a reading enrichment program. And they also do the mentoring leadership, just so we can talk to the kids about college and career choices and things like that.
And what ages are the kids?
High school.
Okay.
Yeah, 9 through 12.
Well, you are so amazing. You're an endless inspiration.
Thank you.
So can you tell us one more time how anyone listening can get more information on Impact, either yes, to join or to apply for a grant?
Yes. Our website is impact100oaklandcounty.org.
Okay.
And on the website, we have the application. It's all online to mm-hmm. become a member. And then the process for the nonprofits are also right on the website.
It's fantastic.
And I know you had asked me earlier, there are certain requirements for nonprofits to apply, and all the criteria is on the website as well.
Okay. All right. And what an amazing opportunity for the women who are getting involved,
yes,
to give back to the community and really make an impact, right?
Yes.
That's the name, right?
Yes.
And
yeah,
really make a difference and really help these nonprofits. And I often say, you know, when people ask us for gifts or money, no one comes to you with a bad cause, right?
Right.
They're all compelling. They all generally have the best of intentions, but fundraising is a really hard thing to do.
It is.
It's like running a small business, and it's a gift. I don't have it personally, and people who are good at fundraising, it's an art. And so I really appreciate these grants and the opportunities that it's providing to these nonprofits, so they can focus on doing the work to help the community.
Right, exactly. And we hope we have simplified the process enough that it's not too overburdensome for them to come forward. And we encourage all the nonprofits, think big. Think about that project that, I mean, how often do you get $100,000, right? Or a chance for it. So think big and think about that project that you haven't been able to do because you didn't have the impactful fund,
right,
to do it.
Right.
So... yeah.
Well, thank you for being here. We're going to follow you and support you and promise to come back. So we want to hear everything else that you're working on.
We'd love to. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
This has been the Karma Has Spoken podcast. If you like today's content, feel free to share our show by email, social media, or any other means. If you've got a question, comment, or other feedback, visit our website at karmahasspoken.com. Keep up with us by subscribing to Karma Has Spoken in your favorite podcast app, or follow Karma Has Spoken on social media. Karma Has Spoken is a production of JAG and Detroit Podcasts.